This is the Athletic Hockey Show.
It is a Thursday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. It's Ian Mendy, Sean McIndoe with you. Coming up, we're going to tee up some games in the NHL that I think are pretty interesting on Thursday. A couple of ideas, too, from Darren Dreger that he floated out on insider trading to kind of generate some buzz and excitement for the regular season next year. We're going to bat those around. Jesse Granger going to answer some mailbag questions. We got some mailbag questions, so we got a lot to get to. A couple things here. Now, look, I had heard a couple of days ago, Sean, that Ryan Reynolds was going to be back in Ottawa this week. And sure enough, he's here today. He's just hanging out with the Ottawa mayor, meeting with him. Do I got to go into like full stalker mode here and try and TMZ this thing and try to get like some sort of comment
from Ryan Reynolds? I assumed you just shoot him a DM at this point and be like, you know, where are you at? What's going on? Yeah, no, we got to at least get some grainy photos from you, I think.
Like the Bigfoot style.
Looks like some guy like people be wearing sunglasses and a toque, and you know you're going, is that like we just take your word for it?
Grainy photo. I'll use my daughter's old iPod Touch just to make it super grainy.
Yeah. I'd offer to help, but I don't know how grainy you'd have to get for anyone to mistake me for Ryan Reynolds. I don't think that technology goes back that far.
No, exactly. So anyway, a lot of buzz in Ottawa this week. Reynolds back in town. This Ottawa-Philadelphia game just got a whole lot more interesting. I'm sure he's going to be in the arena. They're going to do the whole thing.
Can you explain? Because I can't be the only one who's a little confused on the Ryan Reynolds thing. Because we all assumed when his name first became associated with this, and it was sort of like he was floating out there, and we just said, okay, there's going to be a process. There's going to be a bidding war. Somebody's going to get the Senators, and then Ryan Reynolds will parachute in to that offer. But he's linked up with one specific group right now. So if that group doesn't get it, is that it for Ryan? Like, is it take it or leave it? If you want Ryan Reynolds with the Senators, that's got to be the group.
I don't think so. But I think like Gary Bettman got asked about that this week. And one of the things Gary said was, look, he's decided to join up with a bid and he wants to see it through. Now, I think that left the door open that if another group gets the team that he would have the opportunity to potentially move over with them. But I think what intrigued him the most about this is he connected with a large real estate firm in Toronto, the Remington Group, run by the Brady family. And I think, Sean, what really intrigues him is I think they've pretty much told him, not that you have carte blanche to run the hockey team, but they're not as, I think this group is more interested in the real estate play than the hockey team. And they're like, listen, you want to take over the hockey team? You can run it the way you want to run it. And I think that's really appealing to him. Whereas I think some of the other ownership groups maybe weren't as willing or open to maybe giving him as much rein. So he's probably thinking, okay, well, I'll give it a go with this group. And if we get it, great. And if we don't, well, I'm sure I'll have some value to the other groups. That's my thought on this.
Boy, I'd love to pick the brains of Senators fans on that because everybody wants Ryan Reynolds involved. You know, he's a celebrity, brings you some credibility, some fun factor. Absolutely. Do you want him running the team? Do you want him being the guy? Not that he's going to be the GM, you know, picking up the phone and making trades, but do you want a celebrity in charge of your team? And how quickly does that go south if things aren't working well? Or do you say, you know what? Yeah, hell with it. Let's go all in on this. Have some fun. They'd be the most fascinating team in the league with a Hollywood star actually running the show.
Yeah. I think that's the sense I get is that he'd really like, now obviously he'll put people in charge of hockey operations and business and all that, but he would be the guy, I think, at the very top of the hockey / business model, I think, and really try and create the vision for this thing. I think that's what appeals to him the most is the idea that he can help, I guess, shape the narrative around the team. And I think he would have more flexibility to do that with this group. But it's been a weird week. Like all week, different groups have come in and they've met with, you know, either the city officials or They're at the game. They're taking tours. Like, we'll be at practice. You walk around, looking around, and there's like a group just walking around. You're like, that could be the new owners. Like, it's just, it's so weird. And, you know, the one question, like, Gary Bettman came in to Ottawa this week, and he did a press conference, and I asked him, and he, and you know, Gary's Gary, so he kind of dodged the question. But I said, look, like, you've overseen so many franchise sales in 30 years. In fact, I looked it up, Sean. The only teams that haven't changed hands in ownership, obviously there's been expansion teams, but it's only four teams, Detroit, Boston, Chicago, and Calgary, that haven't really gone outside the family ownership. So Gary Bettman has seen, I think, two dozen ownership changes, expansion, all of that. I said, like, have you ever seen a process like this? And he was like, wow, this is, he was like, this is one of the most robust, you know how he speaks, right? It was something like that. But let me ask you this question. Like, most of these sales of NHL teams, like, they kind of happen in a shroud of secrecy, right? And then all of a sudden you find out a team's been sold. Do you ever remember a team being like, it feels like they're being like on a freaking auction block here. And it's like a public thing. Like, do you recall any NHL team being sold in this particular manner?
Not really. And I think it's the circumstances, right? I mean, what we typically see is there'll be rumors kind of out there. Oh, you know, maybe this team might be on the block, and maybe then it gets denied, and it all happens behind the scenes. When you have the owner of a team pass away, and it's a situation where it doesn't seem like there's like it's likely to have the team stay with the family, the estate, what have you. Everybody knows that this team is being sold. Like, I mean, there's no denying, there's no pretending otherwise. So, I mean, you don't see it. To some extent, I mean, we're seeing something a little bit similar play out in the NFL right now with the Washington team, right? Yeah. Where it's you know, Daniel Snyder is to some extent being forced out. Some would say he is, and, you know, some maybe not. So different set of circumstances, but you're seeing this big bidding war come in, and everybody's coming in and out. So it's been interesting. It's been fun to watch. I gotta say, Gary Bettman has not returned my calls yet. I don't know. I didn't get an email. I didn't even get an auto reply. So I'm a little bummed out about that. I don't know if like they're saving me to come in at the end, but I sent him all the details, like how, you know, my fantasy teams have been doing and all of that. But so far I haven't heard anything back, but, you know, still got my fingers crossed.
Yeah. Okay. So that Ottawa, Philadelphia Thursday night, like I said, pretty sure Ryan Reynolds is going to be in attendance. One of a handful of games in the league on Thursday. We got Devils Rangers Thursday night, Sean, in what feels like is a, you know, well, it's certainly not a lock. I mean, Devils or to some extent Rangers could still win the division. But look, we could get a potential first round playoff preview Thursday night. Now, as you look at this, the Devils are ahead of the Rangers in the standings. Is there any, even if the Devils have home ice advantage, is there any scenario where they're not the like the definitive underdog in that series?
I think it depends on how you what you view as definitive. I mean, put it this way, you're right. Right now, as we're recording this, the Devils are up. I believe if the Rangers win the game tonight, they move into a tie and they have the tiebreaker. So they would move ahead of the Devils potentially if they win in regulation. Let's put it this way. Even if the Devils have home ice, and maybe even especially if the Devils have home ice, when everyone's filling out their brackets, nobody ever goes to chalk, right? Everybody always has to pick a few upsets. I feel like this is going to be one of those series where you look at we put out our here's our staff picks, or, you know, you'll see like the NHL, here's how everyone filled out their brackets. You're going to see people picking the Rangers as the favorite here. Now, you know, definitively, is anybody out here going like, oh, this is going to be a sweep, this is going to be a five games, nice and easy for the Rangers? I don't think that at all. And certainly plenty of us have probably lost the right to have much credibility about the Devils because we didn't see the season that they're having coming. So why wouldn't they surprise us again? But I mean, the Rangers are playing so well right now. They loaded up at the deadline. They've got the best goaltending in the series, maybe the best goaltending period, you could argue, but certainly they're going to have a major advantage there. Yeah, I'm I'm picking the Rangers over the Devils, home ice or not. You know, if they meet in the first round, and I know I'm not going to be alone, and I might be surprised at how tilted it gets once we see what those numbers look like.
Yeah, it's going to be so much fun, right? Like we go back to that great playoff series in '94. This will obviously not be an Eastern Conference final, but a first round playoff matchup. But you think to yourself like how good it is for those old kind of Patrick division. Anytime you get anybody who used to play each other in the Adams, Patrick Smythe playing again, it's just awesome. Like for the game,
you know,
right?
you go back to, you know, obviously you think of the 94 series of these two teams, which was, you know, not just the series that put the Rangers into the final that they win their only Stanley Cup of the last 80 years. But it almost felt like the turning point for the Devils too, because of course by the next year the Devils go out and they start winning Stanley Cups, and the Rangers fade a little bit, and now the Devils have finally moved past, and now they're at least on the ice, they're the big team out of the group. The Islanders are fading as well, and now it's sort of, you know, even though the standings would say these two teams are going to be close to a pick 'em, it feels like the Devils are back to that scrappy underdog. Right. I mean, this is, you know, it's not quite the John McClane years where they'd never made the playoffs and it was, you know, it was a miracle to even see them in the postseason. But this is the team. They've been bad for years, weren't expected to necessarily make this big jump this year. And here's the Rangers kind of gone back to their old ways, collecting all the stars, all the big names, you know, and all of that. It's going to have that fun dynamic. And, you know, Devils fans are going to embrace that. And boy, especially when the predictions come out and you see that, y'all, geez, three quarters of the experts at the Athletic think the Rangers are going to win. Well, you know, here we go again. Nobody believes in us. That's a fun card to play when you got a playoff team, especially if it's a real good team like the Devils are.
You know, it's funny. I haven't thought of John McClane in years. And I think if you say the name John McClane to the average person, what are they going to think of? They're going to think of Die Hard, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we didn't appreciate that enough at the time. Like, it would be... It would almost be like if today there was like a regular 30 goal scorer in the NHL named like John Wick.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, John Wick.
And, you know, a few years later, we had a Tim Taylor and we all made Home Improvement jokes. But where were the, where were the diehard puns back when John McClane was dragging that team into the playoffs? Or, the other thing that he's known for, getting fired like 30 games into his coaching career, I guess would be the other.
And was John McClane the coach? Was he fired like around Christmas time?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and that, like, it's the whole debate about Die Hard and the Christmas movie. And then the guy gets fired at Christmas time.
Yeah, there it is. I think what this all comes down to is we need a Die Hard remake with Lou Lamoriello as the bad guy. And I think that's, it's got to be done. I feel like Lou would embrace that.
Hans Gruber is Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah. Oh, instead of like, taking over a building and explosions and all that, it would just be, you know, somebody has grown out their sideburns and exactly. Lou's got to
somebody's
got
grown a mustache for Movember.
Lou won't have it. Yeah.
Lou's nuts. Okay. So Devils Rangers Thursday, first round playoff preview, Jackets Bruins. Now, I'm not the type of guy, I very rarely ever, I mean, listen, I'm in football pools, whatever. I don't ever bet on single games, ever. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm happy to say that. I'm, whatever, that's just not my thing. Boy, Columbus, Boston, does it not feel like the classic game where the Jackets will find a way to win 3-2 or something?
Yeah, it absolutely could. I mean, fans of the Blue Jackets are hoping you're wrong. Because we all know they've been looking at the lottery odds more than anything for the last little while. But yeah, it always happens. Anytime you see these really tilted lines, and it's confirmation bias, right? Because it's not every time, but it seems to happen enough that see these things come out. Now, the Bruins, in theory, have something to play for. I saw I think they clinched the President's Trophy tonight, or they can, depending on how everything plays out. But let's face it, they've got nothing to play for. We all know they're going to be the one seed. We all know they're going to win the President's Trophy. And we all know that nobody cares who wins the President's Trophy. So, you know, I don't think they're out there worried too much about that. Could absolutely be one of those scenarios where they go out there, take it a little bit too easy. Columbus gets one of those fake wins that the bad teams get down the stretch.
Yeah.
That, you know, they spend all summer talking about, like, oh, you know, if we could just keep that momentum going, and then it never, ever happens. Absolutely. This could be one of those games.
The Boston Bruins, as I look at the lines on this game, are 2.5 goal favorites.
Wow. You don't see that very often at all.
Yeah, I don't know. Have I ever seen that? Have you ever? I don't know. I'm sure it's happened.
Yeah, we've definitely seen some. I'm sure we've seen it before, but I would wonder what that translates to on the line, because it's happened a few times this year, and you know, again, the Connor Bedard dynamic hangs over all of this for why we're seeing some teams be as bad as they are. But yeah, we've seen some really tilted lines. And also with scoring being up a little bit, you have a little bit more room to maybe give the favorite a little bit more more of a spread. So I'm with you. I'm not out there betting on single games, but this one, put it this way, I wouldn't be putting money on the Bruins. I'm not putting down my $20 to win 250. Without worrying that Columbus is gonna surprise us.
Yeah, so the Bruins, like I said, on the precipice of winning the President's Trophy, just a historic season. They could flirt with the wins and points record in a single regular season. Connor McDavid, meanwhile, is closing in on 150 points. I know Dom Lucician tackled this in his 16 kind of stats column on Thursday. Let me ask you this question: What's the more impressive gap for you, Sean? Is it the Bruins and the rest of the pack in the NHL, or is it Connor McDavid and everybody else in the scoring race?
I mean, for me, it's the Bruins. And that is largely because at this point, I've given up on trying to put limits on Connor McDavid.
We need the Mean Girls meme of the limit does not exist.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. It's pretty much that. And in a way that's unfair to him. Like, this is just me taking him for granted at this point. It almost feels like there's nothing he can do that would shock me anymore. I just sit back and enjoy the hell out of the fact that we get to watch this guy in his prime. Whereas, you know, for the Bruins to be doing what they're doing, not only is it's unexpected. Look, I mean, I don't think anyone picked the Bruins to be the best team in the league heading into the season. In fact, there were people picking them to maybe even miss the playoffs. So it's been a shock in that sense, but also just, you know, what they're doing in the parity era I think the same thing I saw about them winning the President's Trophy, they would be something like only the fourth team to clinch the President's Trophy and before the 75 game mark of the season. And I don't know who the other teams were, but I'm guessing at least a few of them would have been, from the 70s, 80s, 90s, back when it was much more common to have these powerhouse teams. This isn't supposed to be possible anymore. And obviously we did see it to some extent a couple years ago with the Lightning. But to see a team just run away with things in this era, where everything, there's just this magnet in the mushy middle of the standings pulling everyone towards it. It's really impressive and astounding that they've been able to do it and to keep this going all season long, start to finish has just been ridiculously impressive.
Yeah. I don't know. Part of me is more on the McDavid, and I know what you're saying in terms of, like, you know, you almost have to suspend your beliefs or whatever for McDavid, but like he's up by almost 30 points on Draisaitl, and he's gonna push past 150 in all likelihood. Like, these are numbers that I don't know. I think a couple of years ago, we thought, no one will ever get to 150 ever again.
Yeah,
and he's going to. And
yep,
I don't know.
It's amazing, and it's and yeah, and it's, you know, a lot of people have made this point. nobody's paying any attention to an amazing season that Leon Draisaitl is having. And I saw somebody the other day ask if Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is about to have the quietest 100-point season that we've ever seen. And yeah, certainly in this era, it's pretty ridiculous that he's having an absolute career year. And yet it's all overshadowed by what Connor McDavid is doing. Man, that Oilers team, that team is scary. That team is scary good. I thought I was high on them. And this I had a smart person this week tell me, you're not high enough on this team. They are really, really scary. And I'm starting to tilt in that direction.
Okay. One other thing I wanted to hit on before we bring Jesse Granger in. Darren Dreger. Insider trading this week, Sean. Dregs floats out an interesting concept for the NHL. They're talking about how can we make the regular season more engaging and fun and whatever, okay? So a couple of ideas floated out by Darren Dreger this week on TSN's Insider Trading. Sean, Dreg says, we could see a weekday next season where all 32 teams are playing on the same day, early in the regular season. And he says part of this might be they want to potentially set a record for continuous running games, meaning this could potentially run in conjunction when they're playing the global series in Europe, and then you work in the North American time zones. He says you could basically have 24 hours in a row of hockey, NHL hockey. Like this idea, hate this idea, somewhere in between.
I like it. I mean, it's creative, it's different, and I'm always, look, I've made the case before, and I'm certainly not the only one, that this league tends to be a little too stuck in its ways, a little too reluctant to try new things. So I'm cool with them doing something different. I like the idea. I like, especially the, stretching it all out. I'll be very honest, when he first said, yeah, they're going to have all the teams play on the same night, I was like, yeah, we've done that. But I guess we've done it on Saturdays is more of the thing. So this would be do it during the week. I don't know. I know whenever there's a lot of games going on at the same time, there's always a lot of complaining about the start times aren't staggered and, everything is. So I guess that would address this. I still feel like that's more of a, I think there's a very small sliver of us, which is media and some real super fans that want to watch all the teams and get upset when they don't stagger everything for us. I still think 99% of hockey fans are fans of their team, and they're not overly interested in what else is going on somewhere else. But this would be kind of a neat thing. Give it a try. I mean, would it work? Not necessarily. But we said the same thing about outdoor games, and that ended up working great. Maybe this becomes a new thing, new tradition. Give it a shot. What's the harm in trying?
Yeah. But it's interesting when Dreger says they're going to do this on a weekday. But I don't know. Like, if you're going to do a 24-hour nonstop hockey, would the weekend not be better? Like, just in terms of our viewing habits and abilities to watch? Like,
yeah. I don't know. I mean, it you would think it would. I guess it would depend, kind of what day you pick. Because obviously, if you're, in order to do this, that means you need some teams playing afternoon games. And, some teams are going to say, hey, I don't want to be selling tickets at 1 o'clock on a school day. But some teams do that sometimes. And they turn it into a whole thing, right? It's bring the kids to the game. You get, sell packages to schools and, a bunch of buses pull up and it's that kind of fun day. You could absolutely do it that way. I do wonder if it's almost like two ideas. One is let's stretch it all out, and that probably does work better on the weekend. And the other is let's have all 32 teams going, like even at the same time. Like that would be the other way to do it, is to say like
pure chaos.
7 o'clock Eastern time, go. We're gonna have 16 games going at the exact same time, and it's just gonna be madness. It's gonna be a total fire hose of hockey for 2.5 hours. And then every single game would go to intermission at the exact same time, and we'd all be annoyed. They'd all be on commercial break. I mean, maybe we can get the ultimate modern NHL moment. Do you think we could get 16 offside reviews all happening at the exact same moment? Just flipping through the channel. It's just nothing but, coaches looking at iPads and officials all huddled together. Oh, that would be exciting.
This is a legitimate question, and probably one that like a Mike Russo or LeBron, maybe they've gotten to the bottom of this. But on a really busy night in the NHL, what's the maximum number of reviews the room in Toronto can handle at once? Like, what if, like, okay, let's say there's a busy Saturday night, there's 13 games and 9 are at the same time and they're all going, and 5 of them, for whatever reason, all have video review for offside, goalie interference, whatever. Could they handle them all simultaneously? I guess, right?
I don't know that they could, because I've been in that room. Now, this was a while ago. This was, like, I want to say 2015, maybe. I got invited to, like, go to the room where they look at all this stuff and sort of see how it works. And I don't remember how many screens there were, but there weren't 16, I don't think. Or at least not 16 big ones, and there weren't 16 people in the room who could look at it all. So I actually do wonder what would happen if you got a bit of a backlog there. I imagine when they know it's busy, they probably load up for this. But yeah, what would happen if all 16 at the exact same moment came in? Would it be like the airport where it'd be like, you know, would the referee have to come on and be like, you know, sorry, we're told we're number 6 in line for the review. Yeah. So everybody just sit tight and, you know, we're going to get you on your way as soon as we can. But, you know, until then, they just got to kind of circle around.
Oh, there's no worse feeling when that pilot comes on, folks from the flight deck, and you're like, oh my God, the next 8 words out of your mouth.
And then you see some other plane coming in, like, and you're just like, who are those guys? You just hate those complete strangers more than anyone you've ever hated in your life. You're just going, what do they got that we don't?
Yeah. You know what I love too, is like, we now ask ourselves mailbag questions like that. That sounded exactly like a mailbag question. Hey, what would happen if 5 video reviews happened simultaneously? Right?
Like, what's the maximum amount, and how do we make this happen? You know what this sounds like to me? This sounds like the start of a heist movie. This is like, how do we get? Yes. What's the number that we would need to get that they would have to? You know, they're starting to use security cameras, and that's how you break into the NHL office.
Break into the steal FBI. The FBI. Yeah. The NHL.
Yeah,
exactly.
Going to steal something. I don't know. It's not Stanley Cup. That's in the Hall of Fame. But maybe they're all connected. There's something here. We can do this. We need somebody at each, you know, everybody synchronize your watches, and you got to kick a puck into the net at this exact moment.
And get all of their attention. But okay, then what's the thing that you're going to, like, you're pulling off a heist here.
Mm-hmm.
You could steal anything from the NHL's, you know, archives, library, whatever. What's the one thing you're taking?
You know, all I'm saying is, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying, me and a group go into the NHL head office. That group leaves with a duffel bag that seems to be squirming a little bit. And, you know, it's, you go into Gary Bettman's office and it's, you know, Gary's acting a little weird, but it's, you know, is it me in a Mission Impossible mask? No way to know. There's no way to know. But, you know, it probably, I'd have to get Wish to help me with the Bettman impression so that I could pull off the phone calls. But I feel like I could string that out for a week or two before people got really suspicious, don't you think?
Man, that got dark. I was thinking you're going to like steal the Conn Smythe trophy or something. You're straight up switching out the commissioner.
That's right. That's right. Jeez. And you know, the fun thing would be the fans would figure it out first, but I feel like they wouldn't turn me in. I feel like there would be enough people who'd be like, I know what's going on here. Wait, so Gary Bettman's not left-handed? What's going on? What's happening there?
If I could steal one thing from the NHL in this sort of heist scenario, I'd like to come in, you know, you drop in from the ceiling and you're wearing all black, Mission Impossible. I want the survey results of that survey when he's, you know, when he's like, we've surveyed our fans.
I got
bad news for you, buddy.
You're going to break into that safe room. You're going to open that safe and be like, it's empty. What's going on? Wait a second.
Yeah. That's what I want.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, it's a Thursday edition of the Athletic Hockey Show, which means our pal Jesse Granger drops by for a little Granger Things, brought to you by BetMGM, the exclusive betting partner with the Athletic. You know, Sean, I remember, and somebody actually tweeted us about this. Remember at some point we said, there's no way any NHL team's going to have, what was it, four games with four different goalies recording a win? Remember this?
I vaguely remember that. And I know somebody did tweet and they weren't sure if it was us or Jeff Merrick, who's
the other guy
who spends a lot of time droning on about history. So
Anyway, but here we are. And Vegas has just done it, right? Which is remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah. It's one of those things where you look at the, you see the stat and you go, I couldn't be. I mean, 100 plus years of the NHL, it's pretty tough to have anything brand new happen, but here we are.
Yeah. Four wins, four different goalies, four consecutive games. And this is what you call the marriage of everything. When Jesse Granger, who not only covers the Golden Knights, but is a goalie aficionado, this is everything. Everything is coming together perfectly. So, man, tell us what this has been like, Jesse, watching this goalie carousel play out in Vegas.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. It kind of reminds me of the first season. The Golden Knights went through a bunch of goalies the first year. I think they were on their fifth string goalie that year also. They're very fortunate that the defense they play. I remember the day they hired Bruce Cassidy. They brought him in for his introductory press conference, and he said, my system is goalie friendly. And you guys know me. When I heard that phrase, I like lit up like, whoa, what is that? So then the next time I got a one-on-one with him, I kind of talked it out and like, what do you mean by that? Why do you think that is? And everything he explained has basically happened this year. He has his defense run a zone defense where they create a shell around the net and they'll let you possess the puck on the outsides of the zone, which is very different from what the Golden Knights had run for 5 years. I mean, the Golden Knights under Pete DeBoer and Gerard Gallant were very high pressure defense in terms like when you have the puck in their zone, they are constantly double teaming the puck. They're pressuring you. Their goal is to get that puck back as soon as possible. We don't want you having any possession in the zone. Whereas Cassidy has kind of backed the defensemen off, backed the forwards off into a smaller area around the net. And if you want to possess it around the outsides of the zone, they'll let you do it all day long. And it does two things. One, it obviously limits the high danger chances from in the slot, which is what every defense in the league is trying to do. And the better you do that, the easier it is for your goalies. But to me, what it does that the old system didn't is it gives the goalies easy saves. I would always say for the last few years, like with Fleury and Leonard, like the Golden Knights goalies don't get any easy saves. They get eight shots over the first half of the game and they're two of them are two on ones and there's a breakaway. It's like you don't get into a rhythm and it's kind of hard to say, well, we need to give up more shots so that our goalies can get into rhythm. You don't want that. But at the same time, this Cassidy system gives so many. I think the Golden Knights, their defensive metrics have dipped a little bit here in the last month, but for a while there, they were number one in high danger chances allowed. They've allowed the fewest. And they had allowed, I think, the fifth or sixth most low danger shots, which lets the goalie feel the puck early in the game. You're getting shots from the outside. All you have to do is control the rebounds. As long as you're not giving up juicy rebounds in front, obviously you're getting shots from further away. So it should be easier to control those or deflect them into the corners. And it's made these goalies' lives really easy. They've kind of... Every night, it seems like there's another guy getting hurt. They're throwing another guy in there. Jonathan Quick, who had really struggled in LA, comes in and plays much better than he had in the last few years. Even Jiří Patera, starting his first ever NHL game, a rookie that had played most of the season down in the AHL, comes in and looked really strong in net. Laurent Brossoit, he's been a career backup. He's never really been a number one guy. To me, he looks like the best goalie on this team right now. Statistically, he's the best. The eye test for me, it's a very small sample. He's only played 7 or 8 games, but to me, he looks like the best goalie on the team. He's playing really well. This system is very conducive to good goaltending, I think.
I've got to ask what I think is the obvious question on everyone's mind with all these injuries. Where are you on the depth chart? And how long do we have to wait? Are we like one or two more injuries away? Is there like at least like an e-bug role in your future? What's going on?
No, I think I'm probably like 40 or 50 injuries away. Hopefully we don't get to that point. I don't think I'm getting close on the Golden Knights depth chart. They'd be in trouble. But it's this team, they haven't had to start an emergency goalie. It's amazing considering what happened the first year and this year. They've at least, the injuries have been spread out enough. And like Logan Thompson, he'd missed 6 weeks. He comes back and couldn't even make it through one game. Third period of his first game back, he had to leave the game with an injury. He had to return to Vegas from the road trip. So they're hoping they might get him back before the playoffs. Aiden Hill's another guy who's had a really good season for him. They're not so sure. He hasn't even started skating yet, so he's still a ways out. There are a lot of guys hurt. Right now, it's the Jonathan Quick and Loren Bersois show.
You know, it's funny because you kind of answer. I actually had a couple of email questions for you from listeners. You pretty much answered the one from listener Sean, who was asking, like, how on earth are the Golden Knights able to do this with all the rotation of goalies and all that? But here's one from Tom in Chicago for you, Jesse. Tom in Chicago wants to know, with Jonathan Quick now on a divisional rival, I've got a question about goalies facing former teammates. They see each other every day in practice and for games for years and years. So when a longtime former goalie meets a longtime former teammate, who has the advantage as far as knowing each other's tendencies? Is it the goalie or the skater? Again, that's from Tom in Chicago.
Yeah, this is a great question. I remember year one talking to Marc-Andre Fleury about this quite a bit when he was going to face his Penguins teammates for the first time. And I think it definitely helps both. Obviously, they know each other well. The shooters know how to beat Fleury. They've done it in practice a million times. Fleury knows their tendencies, or in this situation, Jonathan Quick knows Anze Kopitar. He knows exactly what shot he likes to do. He knows kind of, he's seen him pass it and shoot it enough to where he can kind of pick up on, okay, he's going to pass this one. Okay, he's going to shoot this one. I think it helps both. If you made me pick one, I think it helps the goalie a little more. And the reason for that is goalies are the ones reacting to the play. So a shooter isn't really reacting to what a goalie does. The shooters are dictating what the goalie has to react to. So because the goalie is the one trying to read the shooter, I think it helps them more in terms of knowing some of their tendencies. And like, just from my experience, obviously this is super low level stuff, but I can say that in a men's league, I face the same guys over and over and over. Like, even though there's 12 teams in the league, but I see the same guys night in and night out. I know their tendencies. When I go play a tournament in California or Arizona or wherever, and I face guys I've never seen before, it's much harder to read the shots. Like, it is a noticeable difference when you are not used to seeing the guys. So I would think that a guy like Jonathan Quick, that's faced all these shooters in practice thousands of times over the last 10, 15 years, I would say he's got a slight advantage. Yes, the shooters do have some ideas of how to beat him, but because the shooters aren't really reacting to the goalie, they're kind of just running their offense. I think it helps the goalie a little bit more.
And is this, I mean, you kind of answered this, but this is, again, like, we get into this area where it's fascinating for me as a non-goalie to try to get into your head. When you're in there and it's the middle of the game and everything's happening, buzzing around you so fast, are you aware of who everybody is on the other side? Like, is Jonathan Quick sitting there going, okay, that's Kopitar. You know, I know everybody, you know, even as the puck's flying around, he knows everyone is, like, if you pause the game in that moment and said, who is that? He would know right away. Like, yeah, I can tell you who that is in that split second that the puck might be on their stick.
100%. 100%. Wow. If say the puck's in the corner, if you pause the game, blindfolded him and told him who's on the left point, I guarantee he could tell you who's on the left point, who's on the right point. And especially when it's a rush, that's when you really, when it's a rush and say it's a 2-on-1. You know who the shooters are. You know who the playmakers are. When it's a 2-on-1 and you've got a guy coming down, you need to know who has the puck and who's on the backside, because that's going to give you a lot of clues about what's about to happen on this play. We were joking. The Oilers played the Golden Knights the other night, and there was a 2-on-1 and Draisaitl had the puck, and it was Matthias Janmark over on the backside. Leon Draisaitl didn't glance to the there was the thought of passing it to Matthias Janmark never crossed his mind, as it shouldn't. He was shooting it the whole way. So yes, I think knowing the personnel helps. And again, you're trying to pick up all these things, as like you said, as the puck's flying around, knowing all these guys and having practiced with them, you're not always going to see their face or their number. Sometimes you can tell just by the way a guy's skating, by the way he's standing, by where he's going. I think knowing all these players, as well as a guy like Quick knows the Kings, helps you identify who's on the ice and what they're doing and where they're going a lot easier.
Awesome. Wait, listen, Jesse, we'll leave it there. It's great when we get email questions from the listeners pertaining not only to the Golden Knights, but about goaltending. Those are the two things you love talking about. So always great getting you on the Thursday pod. Enjoy the week, and we're excited to see who gets wins for the Vegas Golden Knights here in the next handful of games. Is Oscar Dansk still around? Maybe he'll come back.
No. I forgot where Oscar is. I just saw him on my Instagram the other day. He's not with the Golden Knights organization anymore.
All right.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Thanks so much.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
All right. That was fun as always with our pal Granger. Let's open up the mailbag emails to the Athletic Hockey Show at gmail.com. You can always leave us a voicemail too, 845-445-8459. The emails here, Sean, we got one. Let's read this one here from John in Wisconsin. John in Wisconsin writes in, love your podcasts. Thanks for your hard work. My question for you guys is this. What's your favorite stat to check when you want to see if a skater is actually good defensively? Old school stats or advanced stats can both apply. I feel like it's the holy grail of hockey stats in that nobody has found the definitive defensive stat. That's from John in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Ike, because there isn't one stat that I check. Some of it is, you're going to look at things like usage, you're going to look at penalty kill time, although, you know, people get into whether that necessarily tells you who the best defensive players are. You're ultimately looking at the stats that are possession-based or derived from that, and you get into, like, expected goals and stuff like that. But the trouble with that is you need some pretty big sample sizes to really draw meaningful conclusions from that. So if you're going to, you know, there isn't a stat that could tell you, you know, I could sit there and go, hey man, Connor McDavid's been red hot offensively for the last 2 weeks. Oh, how do you know? Well, he's got 17 points in 8 games. Okay. You know, that's how do I tell you that somebody's been great defensively over a 2 week span? We don't really have that yet. And there's a lot of debate over whether we should be looking for single numbers, or whether, you know, it's got to be, it's got to be a more nuanced look than that. I know as a baseball guy, I love the single number stats they have there, like the WAR stats, where, you know, and there's yeah, slightly different ways to get at them. But I love that it works across eras, and, you know, it gives you a sense of who's doing what. And I really wish hockey had one. And, you know, we're moving in that direction, and Dom's done some amazing work with his stuff. We're just not quite there yet. And then to then split it and say, okay, but split it offensively and defensively. You know, there are some numbers. You go to Hockey Reference, for example, they have point shares that split offensively and defensively. That can be helpful. That can be a good, I guess what I would say is a lot of the single numbers, they're good sanity checks. If you're sitting there going, man, I feel like this Mark Stone guy is really good defensively. And then you go and you look and you say, okay, yeah, well, the number agrees with that. So maybe I'm onto something. But there isn't a number that would tell you, okay, Mark Stone is the seventh best, and I feel confident in saying that that these six guys are ahead of him, because it's just the number doesn't get down to that level of granular detail that you'd really like to see.
Yeah, no, it's a great way of explaining it. You're right; we just haven't quite nailed it down,
and people would argue over whether we can. And you know, I made the mistake of comparing it to baseball, and immediately I know there's people say, yeah, but baseball's different. Baseball is finite plays with a beginning and an end, and, you know, they're all measured the same way. And And hockey is not that. So it's challenging. It does feel like hockey is behind all the other sports, you know, football as well. I mean, you sit down, you read a Bill Barnwell column, you get a level of detail we don't have in hockey. Is that because we just, as a sport, are behind? Is it because of the nature of the sport? It's tough to say. I know that 10 years from now, we're going to have something that's much better than what we have now. Is it going to be that single all-in-one number? I don't know if we'll ever get there.
Peter in San Diego has a hypothetical goalie question involving math. Maybe we should have let Granger stick around for this one. Anyway, Peter in San Diego says, stick with me here for a minute, but here's a scenario for you. Let's say a goalie is in net and there's an own goal scored by a teammate of his. Kind of like what happened with Patrick Laine a couple of years ago. My question is, does that actually register a shot on goal? Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm going to assume that it doesn't. So I've got a scenario for you guys. Let's say an own goal happens right after the face-off to start a game. And the goalie, maybe he gets hurt. And for whatever reason, he leaves the game after that own goal that was accidentally scored in his own net by a teammate. Because there would be a goal against and not a shot against, what would that goalie save percentage be? Would it be negative infinity? Would it be undefined? What would it be? Please tell me you guys have an answer. It's been bugging me for a few days. That's from Peter in San Diego.
This feels like this isn't even a high. This is a math and philosophy question.
This is like an existential point. Question about, this is like a philosophy
question. We're
getting question.
Division by zero. And we do see it again. I'll go back to baseball. Like this can happen in baseball in a sense, right? Where a pitcher can come in, give up a home run, get pulled, and that's it. Their ERA can be infinity because you need to have an out before you start to, you can calculate it. This would be a little bit different, but it's a fascinating question, and it could lead to all sorts of weird and interesting places, which is why I hate to break it to Peter, but unfortunately, he's wrong in his assumption. Any puck that enters the net by definition registers as a shot on net. So even if it is an own goal, even if it's a team, you know, just winning the faceoff right back into their own net, any scenario you can imagine, if the puck goes in, by definition, it is a goal, or it is a shot on net. So I don't see the only scenario, as I'm saying this, the only scenario I can think of now is what happens on those incredibly rare automatic goal calls, where, for example, guy throws his stick, but you know what? Those only come into play when the goalie is pulled. So that couldn't impact a goalie's stats. What would it do to the team stats and that sort of thing? That I don't know, but I'm going to assume even that counts as a shot on net because the NHL has basically defined I do not believe it's possible to have a shot on goal or to have a goal without a shot on goal. Certainly with a goaltender involved, I'd have to check on those automatic goals.
One more email from a listener. This is from Jeff in St. Louis. Jeff has written in at theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com. I am a St. Louis Blues fan first, but I kind of also have a fandom a little bit for the Habs and the Rangers, partially due to their aesthetics. Great color scheme, classy logo, etc. However, other teams I find absolutely unappealing because of their jerseys, i.e. the Predators or Ducks. In fact, even though the Habs would not beat the Devils, I would watch that game over a game involving the Ducks because, quite frankly, the jerseys match better. My question is this a legitimate position to have? How important do you think aesthetics are to sports in general? Jeff in St. Louis.
I'll answer his second question first. How important do I think aesthetics are? I'm notoriously could not care less for the most part about uniforms, logos, color schemes. Certainly anytime there's like, you know, you see people arguing about what a collar looks like or whether the stripe on the arm, like I don't even see this stuff. I've watched whole games and not realized that a team was like wearing an alternate jersey because I'm just like, yeah, look close enough. And it just doesn't even register with me now. How legitimate is it to notice this stuff and to base your fandom on that? Honestly, why not? Is it any more illegitimate than the way that most of us do it, which is just the team that's closest to the town we grew up in? You know, the team that, or the team that you know, our mom or our dad cheered for, or, you know, our grandparents cheered for, and we just picked, like, virtually, I won't say virtually nobody, very few hockey fans, if we're being honest, choose their team. You know, it's usually just something that it's a choice that gets made for you, or you're just, you know, you pick the local team or something. You know, every now and then you'll see somebody come in and go, I'm a new hockey fan and I want to sit down and I want to really pick a team, and they'll weigh pros and cons and that sort of thing. The rest of us are just, you know, we're throwing darts at dartboards here. So yeah, this feels to me as legitimate as any other reason. And hey, at least, you know, if you're picking based on whether the team is good, whether the players are good, whether you like the style or whatever, that changes. That changes pretty quick. The aesthetics, they change too, probably more often than they should, because the one strong feeling I do have on this stuff is I don't get why people do. It bugs me when a team like changes a uniform that they wore during their best years. And, you know, it's all I work too long in marketing. I know the nonsense that goes on like, let's just change something and make people buy it again. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to pick, you're going to like the Habs because of their uniform, you're probably going to have that stick around a lot longer than the best players on that team are.
Oh, geez. Yeah, it's a fair point. Do you remember the NFL when they, on Thursday Night Football years ago, they went to that color rush?
Yes.
And do you remember the controversy? I want to say it was Bills and Jets. And the Bills wore like all red. The Jets wore all green. And then people that fall into that, red, green,
yep,
colorblind spectrum, yeah, which is a lot bigger than I ever realized, mm-hmm, but they couldn't distinguish between the two teams.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, people say like, how come we don't see, you know, teams, why is it always one team wearing white and one team wearing a dark? Why can't they both wear it? And in the old days of black and white TV, you couldn't do that because you wouldn't be able to tell one team from another. There's all sorts of weird reasons for it. I don't get excited. For me, if everyone just went back to the way their uniforms looked in like 1993 and just stuck with that permanently, I would be 100% fine with that. Other than that, I don't notice the little stuff. I don't get too worked up one way or another. But if you do, hey, how legitimate is it? Not very, but as legitimate as anything else that we use to pick our teams in this dumb sports world.
Okay, a little This Week in Hockey History to wrap up the Thursday pod. I want to do one thing, one thing only, kind of a two-parter with it. This week in 1979, Sean, this week in 1979, the NHL announced that it would be absorbing four teams from the WHA. The Edmonton Oilers, Quebec Nordiques, Winnipeg Jets, and the Hartford Whalers would be joining the NHL in the fall. Four teams hopping and essentially killing the WHA. The merger was completed for that season. First of all, so two things. First of all, how crazy is it? So this is in March. Mm-hmm. The NHL announces, hey, in about 6 months, we're adding four teams. Like, think about all the expansion we've had now, and usually you get a 1, 2, 3 years heads up. We're doing
years it. And years and years you get for Seattle and Vegas. And
6 months. Yeah. Hey, by the way, in 6 months, we're adding four teams.
It's crazy that it was in 6 months. And, you know, almost as crazy when when the Ducks and Panthers came in, they did that in less than a year. They announced expansion in December for the following season. Absolutely crazy. I mean, that these days it's like, you know, in 6 months they will tell us the name of the team, and then 6 months after that they will tell us the color of the team. And back then, I mean, what you had a league collapsing, it was there was no choice, but you had to do it quick.
And then the other thing that I had no idea about this. Okay, and I was doing some reading earlier today on that merger WHA NHL, and you got to remember, this was at the height of the Montreal Canadiens winning four consecutive Stanley Cups, right? Like, they were in the height of their dominance. So I had no idea, and I was reading an article. And see, what I didn't realize is a lot of American teams were upset because the Habs didn't lose any players to the WHA. They kept that power. They kept the juggernaut together. And the American teams believed that the Habs were able to do this because only the three, only the Canadian teams at the time were able to share the Hockey Night in Canada revenue. So at that time, it was only Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And they felt like the Canadian teams had an unfair economic advantage because Hockey Night in Canada was paying a lot of money and only the three Canadian teams kept it. So the Habs didn't have to worry about losing their star players. They could afford to keep them. So the NHL owners, the American ones, thought, you know what? If we're going to expand, let's add Canadian teams. And therefore, it's going to, I guess, lessen the financial advantage that a team like Montreal had. And I never knew that until this week.
It's fascinating how things change, eh? That imagine those U.S. owners pounding the table going, we got to get, you know, Quebec, Edmonton, and Winnipeg. We're going to double the size of Canada's national footprint. It was a bizarre. There were so many strange things about that. To this day, if you sit down and go, you know, who holds the record for, you know, what sounds like a simple question, who holds the record for best this or that by an expansion team? You have to get into this gray area of, were those actually expansion teams? Did they count? There was kind of an expansion draft because what happened is there had been players that, you know, my NHL team owned the rights to this player, but he went and signed with the Oilers and the WHA. So now that they're coming back to the NHL, is he my player? Is he their player? And there were these weird reverse drafts of players going back and forth. It was a complete mess. And you know what? We dump on the guy a lot, but credit to John Ziegler for managing that, because he actually got that through, and those four teams were, you know, obviously only one of them still exists to this day, but they all were reasonably successful and the whole thing didn't go belly up. It was a weird time.
No, absolutely. Okay, as we wrap up the pod, we got a special Saturday podcast coming your way. It's going to drop Saturday, and if you've been reading The Athletic all week, Fight Week. Some deep dives into the world of fighting, the past, the present, the future, all of that. I know you're part of the Saturday pod, so just a chance to give you a little plug for that here before we sign out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a real interesting week. I had a piece on Monday that I worked with Joe Smith and Rob Rossi on, where they talked to a whole bunch of names that were part of the various eras of fighting and got some you know, some very interesting insight and also some very funny behind the scenes stuff. And there have been, you know, quite a few other pieces. Julian has a great one on hockeyfights.com, the website. There was Dan had a piece on the psychological toll that this stuff took on a lot of guys. Really interesting stuff. And a few of us got together to talk it through, and I think that's planned right now for the weekend, where you're going to be able to hear that. You know, a real interesting topic, something I know a lot of people have strong feelings in both directions on. I've got a piece coming out early next week that gets into, you know, some of that, and we'll kind of close out the series. But it's been really interesting stuff, and if you haven't seen it yet, definitely please check it out.
Yeah, check it out on the site. And like you said, Saturday, that roundtable discussion on fighting will drop in your podcast, wherever you get them. So listen, this was a great episode. We want to thank everybody for listening to the Thursday edition of The Athletic Hockey Show. As always, we love hearing you from you. Email us, The Athletic Hockey, 458459. And right now you can get a one-year subscription to The Athletic for $1 a month for 12 months when you visit athletic.com/hockeyshow.